Hey, welcome to the Upland Nation podcast. My name is Scott Linden. I'll be your guide this week as we explore all things in the field to feast genre. That's right. We're talking about wild food, among other things. Got some great guests in store for you that will give us some practical tips and some simple ways to enjoy our harvest a little bit more and to share it a little bit more as well. And you might, if you've seen me in the past on television, know how important I think food is to any number of aspects of hunting in particular. I'll get into that in a minute or two. But first, let me remind you that here in the podcast studio, we are outfitted by Cabela's, who makes a lot of this all possible. We won't neglect all that other stuff. I'll have some advice on public access sharptails. And if you have a young dog or even an old dog and you're trying to influence that dog's search pattern, I got a couple suggestions for you there as well. Years ago, we started doing something which we originally called the Shot and Caught Dinner, where we invited a whole bunch of people to bring something out of their freezer that they had done exactly that and share it with the rest of us. Eventually, neighbors decided that, hey, the mushrooming public ought to be invited there as well. And we said, okay, shot, caught, and foraged dinner. And then Linda decided she wanted to come, and she's the best baker in the known universe. So she said she caught the yeast out of the air and then put it into her bread. And believe me, if you've eaten Linda's bread, you know it is well worth including her in any shot and caught and foraged dinner. So anyway, it's all about sharing the harvest, the field to feast idea. And it does a number of great things. So we're going to be talking about those in a little bit more detail very, very soon. First off, how's your season going if it started? A lot of you are out there chasing forest grouse, sharpies, chickens. Dove season is over for everybody by now, although there's another 2 weeks, I think, in California coming up in November. Hope it's going well for you. Hope your dog is healthy. Working on those sort of things right now in some videos. I'll tell you more about them as we get down the road and they're ready to share. Asked a question in our e-newsletter, the Upland Nation Insights, that I thought was interesting. It's been eclipsed now by a few other more pressing social issues, but still important, speaking of California. Do you use non-toxic shot? Yeah, we are required in some places all the time to use it, but not always in the uplands, except in California. I just found that out too. So the results, pretty interesting. 87% of you said, I only use it when I'm required to use it. 12.5% said, I know it doesn't add up. It does if you take the decimal point. I'm not going to bother you with that. 12.5% said, I use it all the time. Wow. Let's hope they're making some more affordable versions of that real soon, because I see that as the writing is on the wall on non-toxic shot. It's going to be there, and it's going to be there with a vengeance. There are any number of reasons why. Some are dumb, some are not so dumb, but you may as well brace yourself. All right, we got our guests just about ready. They're in the waiting room now. Two quick messages, and then we'll jump right in. First, the Upland Nation podcast is brought to you in part by Sage and Breaker, gun care products crafted at the highest caliber. If you got a gun care question, I'll bet one of their videos answers it. Free shipping all the time. Learn more at sageandbreaker.com. And then at dogtra.com, learn all about the T&B Dual and all their other great electronic collars and training devices. They're all there, and quite often there is bundle pricing of one sort or another, added value, extra goodies. They give us the time and resources to bring you this podcast. I appreciate that, everybody at Dogtra. And if you will please do the same by visiting their website, dogtra.com. All right, the Upland Nation is proud to have as our guest this week, Jenny Nguyen Wheatley, and Rick Wheatley. Now, Jenny's name might look a little familiar, and that's why I even chased her down. She is writing for Gundog Magazine, among others, about wild food, and I guess that's probably the safest way to kick off the discussion. Jenny and Rick, welcome to the podcast. We share a lot in common in that we both love, all three of us, love to fish and hunt. We also all grew up in Southern California. Beyond that, our paths diverged, and you're now in Nebraska, where, you know, it's surprising more fish and game and food writers don't live. But here you are. Welcome to the podcast. Tell me, Jenny, first, what got you into the writing about food and associated efforts regarding hunting and angling?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us on, Scott. So I grew up in Southern California. My parents didn't hunt or spent that much time outdoors in general. And I met Rick when I was about in college. I was taking horseback riding lessons at the time, and he ended up being my horseback riding instructor. And he mentioned that he hunted, and it was something that honestly, I had never met a hunter in my life before then. You know, it was just something that nobody in my life did, or that I even knew did anymore. It was like this archaic thing that people did long ago. And, you know, we just didn't have that culture out in Southern California. And, you know, we started dating, and he took me out to Nebraska. I think, what was it, 2011?
Yeah, 2011 it was, November.
But before that, you know, he introduced me to, you know, guns. I had never shot a gun before. So we went out to the range and practice. And in 2011, I shot my first deer out in Nebraska. And at that point, I was still living in Southern California.
And Rick, how about yourself? There's another commonality, the horse thing, but beyond that, how did you get started in the hunting world, and what was a big challenge in getting Jenny involved in that?
Well, my dad's from Nebraska, Falls City, down in the southeast corner, and so outdoor fishing, hunting stuff was always in our blood. It was what we did as children, mostly fishing. He really loved to fish. And for my 12th birthday, he got me a shotgun, and we did some bird hunting around California. But, you know, living where we were living at is kind of difficult. It's a long ways to go somewhere to do some decent hunting. And so it kind of fell back onto more fishing. But I've always loved hunting, always loved shooting shotguns, clay targets, or what have you. And so, you know, I did that when I got to be an adult. I kind of did, you know, the kind of adult stuff, what you're doing when you're, you know, growing up, and time goes by before you know it. I've always loved Nebraska since I was a child. I mean, I remember being here when I was 2 years old. And to me, it was always a matter of not if I was ever going to live in Nebraska, but just when. And, you know, getting, you know, after you met Jenny, like she said, it wasn't that hard. I mean, you know, talking about it, the hunting part, it was new to her. And right away, I like telling people about hunting or what, you know, things that I love and what have you. And she was quite an outdoors person herself already, even though hunting slash fishing wasn't too much in there at all. But, you know, so she kind of took to it with, you know, questions, and she's not someone to back down from doing something new. And so, you know, we did go out shooting. She enjoyed it. I told her about my trips to Nebraska. And, you know, that 1 year she went with me to see what it was like. She got her first deer that, you know, that same year. And it's kind of never looked back. I mean, just before that, we did start the Food for Hunters website. Mainly people would just tell us they would wrap their game in bacon and throw it on the grill. And we always felt, we've been foodies too. And so we always felt there was so much more that could be done with it. And that's one of the big reasons why we started it. And it's just grown in leaps and bounds, and gosh, got far bigger than what we thought it was going to be, happily to say.
So, you know, I started that blog because I found out that he had a a freezer full of wild game, and all he did with it was basically hamburger helper and
Hey, let me write that one down.
there's got to be something else we can do with this. And he actually cooked venison and wild duck for me for the first time, and that was a kind of aha moment for me. And I started the blog because it was just something I thought would be fun to do as a couple. And we started cooking every Sunday, and putting up a new recipe. And so I actually did that before I even shot my first deer. And then I shot my first deer, and then everything kind of came a little bit of full circle, and we're still doing it.
Well, it's interesting you use that term because you're also basically closing the cycle of life by turning wild game into incredible food. And I got to tell you, it's incredible. It looks great. It probably tastes even better. And I'm sitting here with no lunch in my belly thinking, man, I wish I had some of that right now. So pardon me if I drool a little bit on the microphone. It all starts though with the getting of the game, the making of meat. What is it for each of you that you enjoy most about that? Rick?
Boy, I kind of like everything from the planning of the hunt, being out there in the field. I tell you, here in Nebraska, we get falls. They're cool, wonderful. Time just to be out there walking in the fields, you're with other people, but yet you can be with yourself, thinking about, what you're doing, the beauty of the landscape, what you're about to do. If you've got some birds in front of your game and something to take seriously, we try to practice as much as we can. It's just, we just always feel, especially like with larger game, because you're using a rifle, you want to take that one shot, just bam and be done with it. And so practicing with your aim, birds, we do a lot of practicing now with our shotguns. And I've seen both of us, our shooting gets so much better. We're able to do it more often out here in Nebraska. Before, in California, you had to really travel. You just couldn't go down the street and, take your shotgun or your rifle out and just start shooting at targets. Here, it's a little bit easier to do that. And I think we both come a long way in doing that. But I just like the whole experience taking the game animal. It's something, you're taking a life. And we're kind of reverent about it. We're happy for each other when each one does it, and we take care of that animal from the moment we've shot it, until it gets to the dinner table. It's very important to us that we want good quality food from the very beginning, and that starts at the very beginning from when you take that animal, how you take care of it, and how you're going to dress it out, and everything. And so it's a, to me, it's just a very big thing. It's the whole circle. It's everything involved.
And we will be devoting some time to that after the shot aspect of this whole thing very soon, everybody. So pay attention. But first, Jenny, in a lot of ways, we share a very similar life up until that light bulb went off over our head. In your case, it was thanks to Rick. In my case, it was thanks to a neighbor. What is it about hunting for you that that gets your creative juices, pardon the pun, flowing?
I've probably been doing this for maybe almost 10 years now. And as a hunter, I feel like I've changed a lot in those 10 years. Before, I would say I was a reluctant hunter. It was all about being in the kitchen. It was all about the food and the ingredients. Everything we brought home, I plucked. I spent a lot of time on prep. The hunting part, I enjoyed being out, but it's something that wasn't natural to me still. It wasn't until probably the last couple of years that I kind of decided, I'm going to get a little bit more serious about it. And so I'm learning to enjoy hunting a lot more. I've taken shotgun lessons, the last 2 years, and I've gotten more serious about it. And before, you know, I had issues with gun fit and it was really frustrating for me, and that was still. But now that I've kind of figured it out, it is a lot more fun to me. And I love bird hunting, and I'm not an expert at any of it really. I kind of dabble in everything. I try and hunt everything I can. But I feel like bird hunting is something that I want to continue doing for the rest of my life.
Okay, I'll see you out there. You're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. That's Jenny Nguyen Wheatley and Rick Wheatley. Their blog is called foodforhunters.com. No, this is the podcast. It's called the Upland Nation. All right, a little bit more important, very important housekeeping stuff here. Rick first. Big
All right.
game, big game or small?
Well, I like all of it. You know, I love squirrel hunting and rabbit hunting probably as much as I do deer. It's a little bit different of, you know, each one. But golly, that's really a tough one. We do have more deer out here, to be honest with you. You'd think we'd have a lot of squirrels and stuff like that out here. We do, but they're mostly in Lincoln and Omaha.
And people get really upset when you go hunting them in those towns.
I tell you, they're walking backyards, they're just kind of yelling at you and calling the police. I don't know why.
It's don't hey, yeah,
You know, they're very
small
adept.
thinkers. All right, so Jenny, upland or waterfowl?
Upland, definitely. Waterfowl, I haven't really had much chance to do. I've done it here and there, but not enough to really say I love it, but upland, definitely.
You got to get up early. You're cold, you're wet. I'm with you on
All that deer perspective,
that.
there.
All right.
And I just love walking under big sky, watching dogs work, chasing after birds. And I don't like sitting still. You know, I like walking, I like seeing things. And that's why I like it over even big game hunting, because I don't want.
I get it. We're simpatico. All right. So if you had to narrow it down to one particular critter that you were going to cook for the rest of your cooking career, which would you pick?
It would be venison, hands down.
Really?
Yep. It's just a versatile protein. You can do just about anything with it. And, you know, we eat so much venison through the year.
I think something too is the, you know, she was saying the versatility of it. If you've, you know, looked on our website and stuff, we do have recipes basically from all over the world. Venison does lend itself well to so many different, you know, national dishes and different ethnic foods and what have you. And so I think kind of gives you a little bit more, you know, more options to do something different all the time. And that's really cool about that. But boy, we love some birds, and we've, you know, had some really good grouse here just recently, and just love those birds.
Well, since I am starving and I haven't shot a grouse yet this season, tell me all about that dish.
Well, there's a couple of them that she's done. The very first time, we've always, like a lot of people have told us before, because we're new to grouse. And say, oh, it's not very good eating, it's the livery, it's this and that and everything. So last year we shot our first ones, and you know, we weren't quite sure. So something that we learned is just take a slice of that meat and give it a quick season. We put some salt on it, Jen did, and kind of a good sear on each side. And that way you just get the full essence of the meat itself. So it gives you an idea what you can do. And that first bite, I think both of our eyes just popped open. Jen's done a few different things.
Well, the most recent one, well, out here, where I was kind of share the land, same this the same landscape with prickly pear cactus. And so, during grouse season, September, October, it's when these cactus fruit ripen. And so I did a roasted grouse, roasted sharp-tailed grouse, with prickly pear kind of salad.
Sauce too.
So I made a vinaigrette with prickly pear syrup. I also served the fruit sliced on the side as well. And those kind of recipes are kind of cool to me because you're using two, I don't know, ingredients that grow in the same landscape.
I love that idea, and boy, talk about versatility. The prickly pears have got a little bit of the same thing, much like the venison you mentioned, Rick. If you were going to offer up just a little bit of advice, and let's just walk through this process because we gotta, it is going to be a process here. We're out. We'll just say we're in the sand hills of Nebraska and we actually just had our dog bring us back a sharp-tailed grouse that we shot. Now is when the real important work begins. If I were you two, what would I or we be doing next to that grouse?
Get it cooled down as soon as possible. Don't leave it in the back of your truck out in the sun and drive around all day.
Take an ice chest in your vehicle, get it in there quickly. I mean, if it was easy, like a fishing creel or something, but you have something like that you could carry, you can put your birds right into and get them cool, like Jenny says, that's probably what would be a really great thing to do. But obviously you can't do that when you're out in the field hunting. So go ahead, stick it back in your vest and, keep hunting. But when you do get back to your vehicle, do get it in somewhere cool, like Jen says. You want to get that meat starting to cool down because this time of year, even out here, it's pretty warm
Oh yeah.
and is not good for, any meat, let alone wild game.
Well, does it help? And do you actually gut your birds right there on the spot before you head on looking for the next one, or does it matter?
I don't think that really matters
Yeah.
that much. There is a little bit of leeway there. So just make sure that the first chance you get those birds cooled down as soon as possible. And they're not as forgiving, at least this is my observation, they're not as forgiving as like pheasant is. Because pheasant, it's a white meat. For some reason, these dark meat birds, they just turn really quickly.
Interestingly, though, the next question has to do with some people still call it hanging. Most of us understand they probably don't hang most of the time. They're probably aging in the refrigerator. The best wild bird I've ever put in my mouth was Hungarian partridge that had been aged for 4 days in the cooler before I could actually get around to putting them in the freezer. Do you age or hang your game?
Yes, we do. Even with grouse, we don't really hang them because we don't have a place to hang it. But like you said, we put it in our fridge, and it's in there for about 3 days. And if it's a good bird that's not shot up too badly, I like to pluck them if I can. And so I just keep them in the fridge for 3 days, guts in and all. As long as you keep the temperature above freezing and below 40, you're fine.
Guts and all.
Guts and all, it shouldn't matter.
Wow.
And I do the same with pheasant, to be honest with you. I'll go for as long as 2 weeks with pheasant.
How do we know if we've waited a little too long?
Your nose.
Okay. All right. So there's a risk there.
Only thing
Okay.
is, you just gotta, follow your instinct, and I can't guarantee anything. I mean, obviously, if it's a really shot up bird, you don't want to do that. Just breast those out right away, cook them up, or freeze them. But if it's a good looking bird that's intact, it doesn't look too shot up, if you shot well and it's shot in the head, it should be fine.
Great. So let's keep going on that before our next break, and let's take it to the kitchen slash refrigeration system in our home. If we're going to whether we age it or not, if we're not going to eat it that night, How should we store that bird? What is the best way to package it before it goes into the freezer?
We have a kind of a small extra fridge in our, you mean for the freezer or the fridge?
Let's go with freezer first.
Okay, for freezer. We always use vacuum sealer. That's the one thing we always use. Make sure that the meat is dry.
No air.
No air. It has to be dry before you vacuum seal it, because I found that if you wash off meat and it's still wet and you try to vacuum seal it, the seal won't be any good, and that will invite freezer burn.
I've experienced that. You're absolutely right. The other thing I might suggest is, even when you are preparing it for the vacuum sealer, you wipe off the lip, if you will, of the inside lip of that bag before you seal it, for that very same reason.
That is also true. You know, and one thing that I've actually been doing is, I'll butcher the birds or I'll clean them, whatever, I'll wash them out, and then I'll put it in the fridge for a day on paper towels.
Oh yeah. And it
will help dry out those birds, and then I will vacuum seal them, and that's worked out pretty good.
That's a great idea. I'm going to remember that this season. It makes all the sense in the world. A lot of people don't understand. Hey, I'm a music major. For somebody to explain how refrigerators work, period, is beyond me, but let alone that a cold place can dry out stuff. But it does, and it's wonderful right. That it does.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, so we got everything in the freezer or hanging, if you will, and we're getting ready for the most important part, and that is preparing it and serving it for our friends. And this is probably a good chance for us to kind of get ourselves ready for that. By that, I mean you get a quick break while I get to talk about the important stuff that allows me to stay on this podcast, our sponsors. So, we'll be back with Rick Wheatley and Jenny Nguyen Wheatley in just a moment. The rest of you, don't go away. And the reason I tell you that is because I have some very important things to say to you. The first is, it's the time of year where the rubber meets the road. Your dog needs quality nutrition to perform at his peak. Dr. Tim's Performance Dog Food is where you will find that, drtims.com. They'll deliver it on any schedule you like. And don't forget, your first order, you'll take 30% off. Just use the code UPLANDNATION at checkout. I've told you before, and I was reminded yet again yesterday when I hefted the 40-pound bag full of great value as well as incredible dog food. You're not paying for air. You're not paying for false nutrition, funny protein sources, or anything else. It's 40 pounds of great dog food, drtims.com. And espamerica.com is where you'll learn about my hearing protection of choice. I'm wearing it in the field and at the range. They've got a system for any budget. Just choose the one you want, the one your budget can handle, and get fitted locally. No need to go to a sportsman show if we have any this year. Just go to the dealer locator page at espamerica.com, and don't forget, a 30-day money-back trial. Learn more at espamerica.com. Hey, did you see that video on my Wing Shooting USA and Upland Nation Facebook page? It's all about what I learned a long time ago from one of my dogs that was smarter than me. They all are, but you know that. If you've got a young dog or you have a dog that's in its prime and you're trying to influence its search, yeah, I know most of it is, number one, genetic, but some of it is all about what your dog is doing. And for the most part, he's watching you and paying attention to you. So you want a dog that will quarter more? Mimic the pattern that you want him to follow. obviously he's going to cover more ground, but if you're going right and you want to go left, turn left. He'll move to the front so he can see your face again, and vice versa. Go back and forth and back and forth. Slow down. Most of the time we think we're in a race, when most of the time a dog could use a little bit more time and a little bit slower pace so that he doesn't blow through that scent cone too quickly. And finally, if he does get a whiff of something, slow down and let him investigate those good spots. Watch the video. You'll see it all right there in black and white and all the colors of the rainbow. It's on the Facebook pages Wing Shooting USA and also Upland Nation. And now let's eat. Jenny Nguyen Wheatley and Rick Wheatley, welcome back to the Upland Nation podcast.
Thanks, Scott.
So we've got all of this stuff sitting around, whether it's in the fridge or it's in the freezer, and we're trying to do a few things. And I will editorialize for just a moment here, and I want you to tell me whether you've had this experience. A lot of times somebody is on the fence about hunting, or maybe they're beyond that and they're a little bit too, anti-hunting, or they're just ignorant of the whole world and they want to learn more. I found that one way to work on them is to feed them great wild game. You ever had that experience?
Oh yes. I mean, that's why we do what we do.
I don't want to say proving or whatever, but we love showing people how good it is. And it gives us a chance to tell them how nutritious it is. And, you get all of your domestic meat is going to have some sort of, hormones or other stuff shot up into them. They just have to. There is a movement, a little bit more natural meat, but, the stuff you buy in the store is still factory meat, and it just doesn't have the nutrition that wild game does. And so it lets you add another page to the taste, but now you can start explaining to them the benefits of wild game. And then you can kind of move into the conservation part of it on how important hunting really is for wildlife.
I mean, food is definitely the big icebreaker. Everybody's interested in food, whether you are anti-hunting or not. I mean, we've never had a vegetarian over for dinner, that's for sure.
No, but you're almost there, probably.
It'd be kind of fun because then you could just, this delicious, juicy meat that you're eating, they'll have to just look at you while you're doing it. Maybe you could sway them right there.
Yeah, that's kind of my approach, the piss them off strategy.
Well, in the years that we've been doing this, we really haven't really met anybody who was just absolutely opposed to it. I find that most people are pretty curious about it, and it's just a matter of us kind of finagling that and getting them to come over for dinner or have a taste. And then once they do, they get it, whether or not they take up hunting or they get it.
Speaking of getting it, way back when I was doing radio shows for Field and Stream and Outdoor Life magazines, I had on the broadcast an author who I'd never heard of except from his other magazine work, but he wrote a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma. And you might know Michael Pollan for all I know. But it was a chronicle of his move from about hunting to becoming a hunter because of what we've just discussed. The idea that the better food is going to come from the wild, not from a factory, a feedlot, or a grocery store for that matter. Are you seeing more in your roughly 10 years of doing foodforhunters.com and everything else in your world, including your magazine columns, are you seeing more and more people come kind of to that conclusion?
Yeah, I think so. And being in my age group, I think I meet a lot more people who didn't grow up hunting. People are interested in hunting purely because of the food part. I wouldn't be hunting if I wasn't eating it, So, yeah, I mean, definitely, I definitely do see a bigger rise in hunting because people do want to know where their food comes from.
Well, let's get down to it. All right, you have an upland game bird in your freezer or in your fridge. It's been aged to perfection. You're the expert, so I'll take your word for it. If you wanted to convince me to eat more wild game birds, how would you prepare that for me?
Well, it would depend on the bird.
Okay, pick one.
Okay, let's pick sharp tail. Pretty simple. Don't overcook it. And when I cook sharp tail, I either sear it, or I grill it, or I roast it. And everybody should eat it pink, about 140, 145 degrees in the middle. Any past that, and then it starts tasting like liver.
So there's the downside, and it sounds like one of the other kitchen gadgets we all ought to invest in is a pretty good thermometer.
Yes, definitely. I use a probe thermometer all the time. Because, you know, if you're cooking a whole grouse, it's hard to do the finger test like you can do with steak. And so a probe thermometer is something that is indispensable in your toolkit. And for people who are squeamish about eating pink meat, which there are, I would just make a stew, at that point, everything's cooked down. It's tender,
moist,
and there are other flavors going on, and it makes it less intimidating for people.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and in fact, I've got a bag of chucker legs that are going into a chili right now, which is really just a stew as well, for that very reason.
I think people tend to overcomplicate their recipes. You want to win somebody over, make it in a way that they can relate to. Make it like another dish that they've had before, and then it becomes less intimidating. You know, don't put all these exotic ingredients in it. You know, this is not a five-star restaurant. You know, it's just cook it simply.
Well, you say simply, and I get it. Yeah, and I'm all for that because that makes, number one, that makes the cleanup a little bit easier too. But simple is different than familiar. And I mentioned chili, but I'm a fanatic about shepherd's pie and pot pies with all my game birds too. I do that a lot. Where basically you take a chicken recipe and change the meat out.
Yep. And we do that all the time with our recipes.
It works, doesn't it?
It does. It does. The only difference is cooking time.
Right.
You know.
So we got to be real careful about that. And just because most of our followers most of the time are going to be shooting pheasants, which is a different meat altogether. Let's talk a little bit about how that is affected by overcooking. Is it the same basic problem?
It doesn't taste livery like, grouse would.
Okay.
It's like, you know, overcooking a chicken breast. Nobody likes that. So you want to cook it almost all the way through, but you want to keep it juicy. I'd say, I don't know, 150, 155 internal. Some people even cook it even lower than that, and that's just personal preference. You don't really have the issues of, I don't know, salmonella or whatever like you would with chicken.
Right.
I wouldn't think so.
So we're not, I've never looked into this, but I get the feeling a lot of people overcook all sorts of game meats because they think there's some creepy crawly wandering around in there. We don't see that, do we?
It's very rare.
No, I really couldn't say we can have, and into that overcooking thing for a new person, you know, this is your chance to turn somebody. And so you want to be really careful with your temperatures, like Jen says, you know, do invest in that, you know, thermometer. But because if your only chance you set something on the table and it's dry and tough and tastes terrible, you've lost your chance. That person will probably never try it again. And so it is so important with that temperature. It's like something we just can't, you know, express enough.
And let me just editorialize for a moment. Check me on this, because I've always been told that you take that dish off the heat, it's still actually going to cook for a little bit as well. So if you take it off at rare, it'll be medium rare by the time you're ready to serve it. Am I recalling that correctly?
Yes, that is true. There's carryover heat.
So we want to be careful about our timing as well as everything else.
Yeah, definitely. And if there's anything that I'm super careful about in the kitchen, it's temperature. It's that.
Well, let's talk about a few of those. Let's just riff on, you know, this is kind of like a fun game. Each of you, just give me some fundamental dishes that most of us could probably handle with very little help and very few skills, let alone very few tools, that somebody's going to like. And they can be for any game birds, but just keep them simple and just tell us basically what each of them are.
That's something Jen does the lion's share of the cooking now. I'm the lucky one that gets to taste all these things. But something with the website, and it's always been from the very beginning, was to make our dishes simple. Like, you know, Jen said, there's not all these, you know, not exotic ingredients. Some of them might be from other countries, a little hard to find. But if you go to an Asian market, which California has a lot of them, or some other ethnic market, you can find those really pretty easy, or online. But, you know, I get to eat all those things. Jen could probably, you know, be more better on that than really what I could.
Well, you bring up a good point, Rick, and let me just remind everybody, that's Rick Wheatley. He's also the bringer of game from a number standpoint. Then Jen has to clean it all and cook it. So Jen, you know, name me five things we can do with game birds that are simple.
One of the earliest recipes I've done with pheasant is barbecue pheasant pizza. It's like, you know, barbecue chicken pizza, mm-hmm. Pheasant breast. You can make your crust from scratch, or you can just buy pre-made crust. And for the base, I just mix half barbecue sauce and half marinara sauce, and then it's just caramelized onion and mozzarella cheese, Parmesan cheese, any greens you want, like cilantro, whatever you have, green onion, and then you put your grilled pheasant breast on top. You chop it up, and then you just stick it in the oven until it's done. And that's one super easy way to prepare pheasant.
Mm-hmm.
Another easy one, huh? Or enchiladas. Talk about
the enchiladas. My mom's Mexican, and so I grew up watching her cook a lot of, you know, Mexican dishes and what have you. And enchiladas are, I think, not only me, but I think just about everyone likes enchiladas. And that's another dish. It was just very simple. You've got, as far as ingredients go, you've got your pheasant chopped up, cooked, like Jen says, your tortillas, your enchilada sauce, chopped onions, cilantro, cheese, cheddar cheese, and we like putting some diced olives on top, and it's just super simple doing that. You know, a couple other things as far as spices go, cumin, some salt, a little bit of pepper into it. There's really not much to it, and it's super easy to do, really fast to do. It's like a casserole, except, you know, you're rolling up the tortillas with the meat. Right. Inside it.
Sabroso
is right.
Yeah. That means tasty, everybody. pardon me. Yes. And again, why are you making me so hungry? You know, here's one. I got it in the fridge right now. Everybody makes tuna salad. Put bird meat in instead.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's very good. Very easy to do. You got leftovers? Perfect.
That's a great idea for leftovers. I mean, I've done it with wild turkey breast. Mm. I don't know the upland, but
it's a bird.
I mean, He'll work with just about
Yeah.
any white meat bird.
Yeah.
Pheasant's great for that.
Yeah, very good idea there. And you can use it as a, with a sandwich. You can have it for a dip, an hors d'oeuvre. There's so many things you can do with it. If you got nice little puff pastries, you can, make it into an hors d'oeuvre and serve it. And yeah, wonderful idea.
I go ahead.
Yeah. Tacos. I mean,
Tacos.
everybody knows tacos, and it's not a great mystery how to make them. Again, it's really good with your whether it, you're cooking the meat for the first time, which is good. You can put all your spices in with it, what have you. Or even if you have leftover meat, you can still do the same thing with it. And very
And
simple to do,
you can use the whole bird,
right?
Right.
and all stick it in a crock pot. I usually don't like to use a crock pot, but I just stick it into my Dutch oven and I'll let it go in the oven until it falls off the bone. And then when you're ready to make tacos, you shred all the meat and you season it and you brown it in a bit of lard, and then you put it in a taco. And
Super
it's
simple.
pretty
Chopped
easy.
onion, chopped cilantro, very easy.
Olé. Sounding great. And yeah, again, three Southern Californians talking to each other. I'm not surprised it's all Mexican food.
Exactly.
We make mistakes, and I'm not going to ask for your opinion on cream of mushroom soup, but we all do something wrong. Do you have a pet peeve when it comes to honoring our wild game in the kitchen? You see people do things that you probably cringe at. What are they?
When I first started doing this, I was kind of like cocky about it. But over the years, just I don't care. Eat it how you enjoy it. More power to you. If you like it, it's cream mushroom soup, whatever. The one thing that is a pet peeve, if anything, is people leaving the legs in the field and not
Yeah.
utilize much of the animal as possible. That really is the only thing that annoys me.
And me, and I understand all of that, but if we can help in that regard, and you mentioned you like a Dutch oven, I'm the opposite. I like that crock pot. I just fill it with game bird legs and thighs and backs for that matter. And then at the end of the day, it goes in the fridge overnight. Then the next day, it's all meat, just picked off the bone, and you can do it with it what you like, but it's right there and it's ready to go.
Very true.
How about shot? I just bought myself a little metal detector. Have you ever used anything, or what should we do once our bird is in the kitchen to ensure that all of the shot is out of that bird before we serve it to somebody?
I haven't had a good way yet. Before I serve anything to people, I tell them this is wild. It was hunted. Please be careful. That's my warning before dinner.
A real big issue with it. I mean, from time to time, you'll find a shot or something like that, but it's been very, very rare, to be honest with you.
By the
But
time it gets to the table, it's probably been looked at several times, right?
I try to, try and get all of it out as much as possible and do my due diligence. But I tell our guests that it is what it is, and nobody minds. They know what it is. It's wild game. In a way, it kind of makes it a little bit more fun.
Oh yeah. Okay. I guess that's one way to describe it.
Starter.
Yeah, when it starts with a scream. Yeah. So we kind of talked around this, but are there any other, kitchen faux pas that that most of us commit while we're cooking wild game?
Oh, geez.
I mean, like Jen said in the beginning, the whole soup thing, cream of mushroom or what have you. But we've kind of, I don't know if you want to say a little more forgiving or what have you. First of all, you want to do what works for you. If it tastes good, great. If your friends like it and family, fantastic. I mentioned at the beginning, we first started because everything was wrapped in bacon and so on and so forth, which I was doing too. But it does taste good. You can't deny that fact. But, you know, to us now, the main thing is, you
taking
know,
care of
taking
meat.
Care of the meat. That's so important, like we mentioned from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, you can have great meat that was taken care of in the field, but if you don't cook it right, you've ruined it. You could take care of it, you know, the other way around, too.
You can have the best recipe in the world, and if you don't start out with good meat, you're not going to end up with a good dish.
Yeah.
And
it's very big with us, though. That's just something we harp on all the time when we do speaking engagements.
I get it, and I know what you mean. By the way, you're listening to the Upland Nation podcast. I'm Scott Linden, your host. That's Jenny Nguyen Wheatley and Rick Wheatley. They are the founders of the, I'll call it a website. It's really a kind of a food blog. It is called foodforhunters.com. Jen, you also are writing for more people than just Gundog Magazine, I think. Maybe even some of the folks on our list, Meat Eater, Quail Forever, looks like maybe some other folks in there. Where else can we see your work?
Strung Magazine. It's a new magazine.
Deer and Deer Hunting, Bow Hunter Magazine. She's has stuff. You go to their websites. Outdoor Channel.
Oh, sure.
Channel. Yeah, it's almost got, I hate to, you know, I don't.
Game and Fish Magazine.
Game and Fish Magazine. So many different ones, some websites where there's one that's called Jones Dairy Farm. They wanted their products promoted with wild game. And so Jen, for a couple of years there, did a lot of recipes for them. And so it's really, gosh, we have to almost have to scratch our head and think, you know, who else has it been? But there's been a lot of them. It's kind of amazing over the years, just kind of how quickly and it's multiplied, though. But Jen has done a very good job.
That's excellent. And of course, I'm eager to actually shoot a goose this year because I'm going to try and tea smoke it. How's that for you, Jen? That is intriguing to me, and I hope to try that. But if you were to leave us with a short spice rack, the things that really work well for wild game birds, could you narrow it down to three or four?
Spices.
Well, there's always the perennial is salt, of course.
Paprika. I use a lot of paprika when I roast.
Yeah.
Not so much that it really gives it a lot of flavor, but it does help the birds brown, and it gives it really great color, especially in the oven, and that's why I use a lot of paprika on roasting whole birds. Curry powder is really great. It's just not any bird.
Yeah, we both love curry, so, you know, any meat with curry to me works. I'm always up for that.
Yeah, I'm years ago, a wild game chef said, never go without dry mustard. And same thing as your paprika, not so much that you actually taste it, but it's somewhere in there and it just does perk up a whole bunch of recipes, including my chili, which could use all the help it can get. So it sounds like we're on the right track if we basically cook food we like and substitute game birds for whatever other protein source was in there. Am I on the right track there?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's how we do it.
Yeah.
And if you want to go beyond that, foodforhunters.com is where you get all the other great ideas there. And watch for Jen's column in some of those magazines, including Gundog periodically. So, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I learned something about cooking, and if I get lucky, maybe I'll actually do something with some of those ideas in the next couple weeks. In the meanwhile, Rick Wheatley, Jenny Nguyen Wheatley, thank you so much for being a part of the Upland Nation podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having us. This has been really delightful talking to you.
You're welcome, and have a great evening.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
You too.
And the rest of you, stick around. This Land Is Your Land is the feature on Public Access, and that's next up. Speaking of sharp tails, I'm going to offer up a kind of a real-life experience course, every place I tell you about, I've probably visited at one time or another, maybe even more. But first, a word from Gunner Kennels, gunner.com. That's where you learn all about the only double-wall roto-molded crate on the market. Gunner offers a lifetime warranty on their kennels. They've been tested and proven to save actual dogs in real accidents. Take a look at some of the videos out there of the testing process, and then read those testimonials from folks like you and me, whose dogs are still with us, thanks in large part to a Gunner kennel. Take the Fit Finder quiz. There's a place where you can actually do some virtual reality, put your dog next to the new kennel you're going to buy. It's a lot of fun on top of everything else. Your dog will thank you, and so will the folks at Gunner.com. And Dog Trust, speaking of dogs, you know how much I love their T&B dual system. Two sets of buttons on one controller. No toggling. Don't even have to look at the handheld device. You can just do it by braille, if you will. I put one collar on one end of the dog and one collar on the other end. They can be at different levels for different purposes. It works pretty darn well for me, and it might work for you. They've got all sorts of other choices when it comes to training collars, beeper collars, bark collars, and everything else. It's dogtra.com, and if you use the code SLUN10, you get a 10% discount on anything over $200 and another 10% off. Oh, I'm sorry, no. And free shipping on anything over 10%. So take a good look at everything at dogtra.com. This land is your land. Places I've been where I think they can handle a little bit more pressure, and I invite you to take a look at them. And of course, and you know, I encourage you to look at stuff close to home as well, but This Land Is Your Land this week is brought to you by Huron, South Dakota, where the pheasants outnumber the people. 124,000 acres of public access. Learn more at HuntHuronSD. Let's talk sharptails. The sand hills of Nebraska, not as well known as some of those other sharptail hotspots, but there are a ton of birds out there, especially in a good year. And what an experience. They are exactly what they sound like they are. They're big sand dunes, but they're covered in grass. And I'll tell you, it's been my personal experience that every time you get to a low spot, there's a pond. It's all about water tables and porosity and things like that, but we're talking about wild birds here. If you're looking for sharptails, one of the places you might want to go is the Calamus Reservoir Wildlife Management Area, or the Bessie Division of the Nebraska National Forest near Halsey. I know it sounds strange, a national forest in Nebraska, but they have them. And there are actually a few trees there, so take a look at those, and if you're looking for more information on more public access in more states, visit my new website, findbirdhuntingspots.com. All right, the Upland Nation podcast, as always, is brought to you by Happy Jack Dog Care Remedies. If your dog has a need for something to treat his skin, his coat, parasites internally or externally, pads and everything else from tip to tail, go to Happy Jack Inc. INC, happyjackinc.com. And if you are looking for hearing protection, you can't go wrong visiting my friends at espamerica.com. It's what I use, and I think you will benefit as well, because remember, hearing loss is cumulative. You can't get it back. And that brings to a close another edition of the Upland Nation podcast. Thank you for listening. Would appreciate your telling your friends. Would appreciate your subscribing, rating, or reviewing the Upland Nation on Apple Podcasts or somewhere else in between. Wherever you get your podcasts, there's probably a place to leave a 5-star review. And wouldn't that be great? I sure appreciate it. That's what I got recently from these fine folks. Thank you, Indy Car Junkie, Freckles Smith, JRefuteCC. Appreciate all of the kind words. Hope we can continue to do a good job for you in the future. Here's my quote of the week from Samuel Butler, author. The great pleasure of a dog is that you may make a fool of yourself with him, and not only will he not scold you, but he will make a fool of himself too. Flick, you ready? Let's go out and make fools of ourselves. Until I see you in the field, I'll see you right back here next week at the Upland Nation Podcast. My name's Scott Linden. Thank you for listening.